we are going Matrix on you bitches.
On this episode of the commercial break,
the final thought, Mike's parting comment was that everybody's got Steve-O wrong, that Steve-O's actually very intelligent.
Wow.
Yeah. Who? He said, everybody's got you wrong. You're a smart guy.
Wow. Really?
The next episode of the commercial break starts now.
Commercial break. I'm Brian Green. This is the director of Stunt Person Services, Tina. Tina, best to you.
Best to you, Brian.
And best to you out there in the podcast universe. So fucking excited because Steve O is going to be joining us shortly.
Can't even wait.
If I had told you 15 or 20 or maybe even more years ago than that, that Steve, that you and I would be sitting in a room somewhere talking to Steve-O directly, would you have believed me?
I would have asked you how many drugs you were on.
You would ask me if this is another flight of fancy due to LSD?
No way. No way I would have believed it. But here we are.
I joined a whole band based on one long night of drug use and you dropping me off the next
That's
day.
That's right.
And never to be seen again. Brian went into the void, the Chopper Johnson void.
I'll never forget it.
Oh, I will never forget it either. With Steve-O coming in reminds me, I hadn't told this story when we were talking about Steve-O last week when Chrissy was in here, but there was a guy that I knew at when I worked at McDonald's, and this is before knowing you, but I worked at McDonald's when I was like 15 years old for 2 or 3 years. There was one of the cooks back there. He had no teeth. I mean, seriously, no teeth. He had like one jagged tooth coming out, but he was the nicest guy. I'll never forget his name. It's Greg. Greg the grill guy. And he could make you a burger with no onions, lickety split. If you were in his favor, you were getting your food out rather quickly. And back then, McDonald's employees actually gave a shit whether or not someone was
standing.
Remember the days. And listen, I understand fast food work for no pay and dealing with shitty customers is terrible in 2023. But anyway, this guy, he, before Steve-O and Jackass came along, he had this idea that he would do these crazy stunts on videotape. So he... At night, they would sometimes close down, and I imagine that they were high and or drunk, because he's also the first person I ever bought weed from. But anyway, I would imagine he was high or drunk, but him and this other manager, they would take this big, clunky VHS recorder, video recorder that they had, the kind that you put on your shoulder, and it was just like 30 pounds.
Heave it around.
Yeah, and people thought you had a spaceship on your shoulder. It was crazy. So they would take this and they would make these small movies inside of the McDonald's late at night, like at midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. And one time I got invited to be a part of this movie that they were making. It was supposed to be like an action movie at the McDonald's, and I had to jump over the counter and fall on some cardboard and all this other shit. Well, when I wasn't there, they did a movie, the manager and the grill guy did a movie together where he was supposed to jump off the McDonald's roof into a bunch of boxes, empty boxes. This was supposed to break his fall, but it did not break his fall. It broke his legs is what it did.
No.
And he ended up getting a broken ankle and a broken femur and was out for like, I don't know, 2 months or something like that. And the poor guy didn't have a pot
teeth,
to piss
no
in.
Leg.
No teeth, no legs, no
this
grill.
This is a catastrophe.
Probably no drugs or either really good drugs, one of the two. But for 2 months, we didn't see the guy. And only after he came back did we get a chance to watch the videotape, which was gruesome, Tina. It was gruesome.
Live
he just went
on tape.
Straight through the boxes.
Oh, no.
And then the guy, the manager runs up with the video camera and, are you okay? Are you okay? And you could see him there. He's like, I think you should call an ambulance. And when now I'm thinking Steve's coming in today, I'm not going to tell him the story because it's dumb and Steve's done things that are 10 times as crazy, but I just remember that pre-Jackass, these guys had this idea that they were going to do these crazy stunts all by themselves, videotape it, send
Our
it to who, I don't
Our generation was
know.
Totally into it. I mean, Tom Green, you think about it, it was like...
Oh,
it
Tom
was a,
Green?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a
it
huge
was
a, thing.
It was a huge cultural movement when people were like, let's do dumb stuff that we can record it and watch it back. Let's do more dumb stuff.
That's it. Like the viral skate videos. You
what
don't
was
like
viral
it.
Back then? A box of VHS
That's
tapes?
It.
And if your VCR didn't work, God forbid you didn't have a good working rewind button.
That's right. Or God forbid you didn't know how to press record on your favorite episode of whatever.
That's
or
right.
God forbid someone recorded over your favorite episode of whatever. But you're right about this. Like MTV, there was a whole... when MTV wasn't always as shitty as it is today.
That's right.
There was a time when I think they really had their finger on the pulse of what was going on back in the 90s and early 2000s. And they, Tom Green, some of the weirdest, wildest shows, Beavis and Butthead, Tom Green.
Throw a skateboard at it, and we're in.
We're done.
Yeah, we'll watch.
Some skateboard and Dinosaur Jr.
Yeah,
and
do something stupid. Yeah, whine at us through the radio. We're gonna yum it up.
You don't like Dinosaur Jr., do you?
I mean, I don't know that I'd pay to see a show today, but there was a time where I could get through a few songs.
I think
that one album was good.
What? Where have you been?
Yeah.
Was it the one with the painting?
The Toadies. Who else? There was a string of those whiny.
Yeah, they were all, well.
It was like grunge and then the other.
Do you want to die? Do you want to die?
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, I recently saw them do that. Like, I watched on YouTube them do that at a small club. They're touring, actually. Toadies are.
No.
Yes, they are. And I watched them on YouTube, and I can say that their glory days are probably behind them.
Probably.
But, you know, if you
but
get
we're
the
cr- still here, so.
Yeah, that's it.
We'll
but if you
come.
Get the crowd of 50-somethings to sing, do you wanna die? Then you don't have to sing those rough parts.
Just sell them a $20 t-shirt, let them into the concert for free, call it a day.
$20 t-shirt. If you're a Toadies fan, you're paying $100 for a t-shirt they gotta get from point A to point B.
Listeners, do we have a Toadies fan out there?
Oh, I know that there's a couple Toadies fans out there. Listen, I didn't mind that one album, but I wasn't
that
gonna
one.
Go. Yeah, that one. I didn't get the second one.
No way.
But I do have a number of Dinosaur Jr. albums because I do like that.
But at a festival, I'd see them.
And that's what they're doing right now. It's a lot of fun. They were at Mempho with Chrissy.
Yes.
Yes. And they are.
But not last year.
This year. This last
yeah,
year.
I didn't go this year.
No, I didn't go this year either. No, that one once was fine.
That was enough.
I loved
Mempho.
We're
not trumping widespread.
No. I loved Mempho, but next time I go, I'm going to go purely as a spectator, not as someone standing at a tent. No porta potties. No yeasty beer smell all weekend long.
It was fun.
We had a good time. And we got great interviews out of it. The only problem is the entire, like, all you can hear is,
I like coconut sugar.
And people throwing up behind the porta potties.
It was bad. We were like an extra porta potty.
Hey, guys.
Hey, everybody. Hey, you want to come over here? What is this? Oh, it's a podcast. You're doing a podcast? Yeah, well, we're not doing a podcast because neither of us can be at the tent at the same time.
That's right.
But what we are doing is giving you a sticker and an opportunity to talk drunkly into a microphone, and I'll never use the audio until someday when I can clean up the background of it. But I will give you an update on this while we're talking about live music. I did catch a video because, you know, I've been talking to Chrissy about the big Creed reunion tour that's going on.
I know.
And Scott Stapp, who I met one time at an airport. He kindly moved his guitar so my child could sit down and eat. So I ate an entire McDonald's meal before taking an international flight, sitting across from Scott Stapp.
Solid play.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I didn't, because I wouldn't, gush and gosh over Scott Stapp. But because I've been talking about him, and YouTube listens to everything I do, up appeared Scott Stapp live in somewhere New Jersey, on the 23rd, singing Creed songs with his own band. They haven't actually done the reunion yet.
Are you allowed to do that?
Yeah, sure. He wrote the song. Yeah,
oh, okay.
He wrote the song. I think that's like an agreement you make about publishing rights and all that other bullshit.
I wouldn't know.
Because I think that even if Scott sings it live and it makes money on YouTube or the whatever, then the band, if they have publishing rights, might get a cut too. I don't know how that shit works. And I can't imagine that Creed still has their publishing rights. I mean, Scott went through a pretty bad time. He probably sold that
just
shit.
Just let it go.
Yeah, just let it go. But I will admit this, while I don't like their music, Scott Stapp's voice sounds really good. He has been in with oral coach, but it's probably called a vocal coach.
I will go with vocal orals, other thing we talked about the other day.
FetLife?
That's at FetLife.
FetLife.
Yeah. Your oral coach can be found at Frolicon.
But even though I don't like them, I'll give them props where the props are due. He sounded good. He sounded just like he did on the album that we heard way too many songs of. But people who like Creed and they're going to see Creed, I think they're going to get a good version of Creed because it's not
that's refreshing.
Vince Neil trying desperately to sing his own songs while out of breath, eating a donut and forgetting the words.
Yes, because
wow!
That is really disappointing when you're excited and you finally get to go see that band.
Yes.
And then it's
Terribly disappointing.
It's like letting the balloon go before you tie the knot in it.
And the crazy thing is that Motley Crue was like the number one revenue generating tour of 2022.
Wow.
And I cannot wrap my head around why, after so much publicity about the bad singing, bad vocals, backing tracks, Tommy Lee's not even playing the drums, all this other stuff, like, I can't imagine why you would want to go spend $109 to sit in front of there.
Right.
Sit in front of them. But, you know, I guess if you're a diehard fan.
We did it for GNR.
Yeah, that's true. That we did it for Guns N' Roses.
That wasn't disappointing at all.
No, it wasn't.
He looked bloated.
He's bloated. He's way bloated.
But they sounded pretty damn good.
They sounded pretty damn good. Now, he's got a different register than he did before. He's
and we
not...
drank enough. Probably helped.
I was so fucking sloshed during that show. I was so fucking sloshed. I left like two songs before it ended because I was like, I'm not going to get into
the
traffic.
I stayed till the bitter end. I even wore the side ponytail. Remember? I got all dressed up.
You were looking good.
I rocked my 80s. My 80s best.
You know who's a big fan of Motley Crue? Steve-O.
We should have brought that up.
We should bring that up. Yeah. And you know, Steve O would call around hotels and he would try and find, this is a story that I read on the internet, he would try and find where Motley Crue was staying so he could hopefully hang out with them in the lobby or, you know, meet up with them
surreptitiously.
I also used to do that when bands would come to Atlanta and I liked them. I would try and call around and find the hotel. I never once got a hold of anybody except for Crash Test Dummies. I managed to find out they were staying at the Hampton Inn or whatever it was.
That's another weird one out of the 90s. So were they, did you hang out with
No,
them?
I didn't even go. Oh. No, I was just more curious than anything about where they were
Why
staying.
Why are you guys staying at the Hampton?
Yeah.
Because we're Crash Test
And like
Dummies.
The next year I saw them at Chastain and there was maybe 50 people in the audience.
It didn't even have a name. The song was just called
I wonder whatever happened to them. Bare Naked Ladies and Crash Test Dummies, the two bands out of the Canada that came down here are now destroyed. I went on tour with Bare Naked Ladies once. And by tour, I mean we met them here in Atlanta because I happened to be at the show with two really attractive girls, caught the eye of some roadies.
Yep.
Those roadies then got us backstage. We then actually hung out with the Bare Naked Ladies. And then they invited us. How do I think you were involved in this somehow,
like,
way, shape, or form?
Wasn't that 96 Rocks Big Day Out, like mid-90s?
Something.
We ended up on stage with Squirrel Nut Zippers in the 99 tent.
Oh, that's right. Squirrel Nut Zippers.
Remember them?
Yes. We've alienated anyone over the age.
Sorry,
anyone under
guys.
The age of 30 is just gone now. They're like, I thought you guys were talking to Steve-O. We are going to talk to Steve-O. We're getting prepped. This is the time when Steve-O was like coming on the scene.
It's true.
And we were so excited about this new show, Jackass, which I could only watch half the stunts one time.
Right.
And then I didn't want to watch it again. But you couldn't turn away. I think if you were alive,
had to look.
When Jackass the series was on
and
playing on MTV, you had to look. It was a train wreck you had to see because everybody was going to be talking
about it. Well, and here's the thing. We didn't have YouTube back then.
True
we couldn't
story.
Just go watch other idiots doing
True
this.
Story.
This was our only idiot stunt TV show like available.
The Idiot Box.
That was it.
Yeah. With the television show that our parents would have never allowed
banned
us.
From the
banned
house.
From the house. But since my dad was, what did he call it? He called it blissfully unaware of what was going on in the house. I watched it every time that it came on. And because we could not press rewind and see it again.
No, or record really, unless there. You had the VCR.
That's right. Unless you had the VCR.
And it worked.
And it worked. You know, my son, one of my kids, he says, when we, Astrid and I got married, they sent us the video, DVD. They didn't even send it to us electronically. They sent it DVD.
Wow.
And then they sent some clips electronically. And the clips were beautiful. They put music to it. It was wonderfully. But then Astrid and I looked at each other. We're like, when are we ever going to watch this? We don't have a DVD player.
Right.
So I go to Walmart. I buy the $19 DVD player.
$6.99 on Black Friday.
Yeah. I plug it in. And what I get is a 7-minute truncated version of the wedding. That's all. That's all that's on there.
No way.
However, the toasts that were made, like the special
the stuff
features.
You want, yeah.
The stuff that, the toasts that were made. No, quite frankly, the stuff that I didn't want.
Oh, come on.
No, they gave good toasts.
They did.
But it just made me realize, wow, we probably should never watch this again. What's the fucking point?
Use it as a coaster.
Yeah, my son's using it as a frisbee currently right now. He got uninterested as quickly as he got interested. He was like, what's this? Why are you guys there? Where am I? What, who's doing that? Why were you so fat, Daddy? Son, it was a different time. It's back when I could eat a meal without getting horrible indigestion. Now I just don't eat. That's right. So we got Steve-O coming up. We're very grateful that he's decided to spend some time with us. Let me give you the pertinent details before we get him on here. He's got a brand new special called Bucket List. It's available on his website. We're going to put a link to it in the show notes. Steve-O's Wild Ride is a podcast and a vodcast. It's on YouTube. Quite frankly, I think you should watch the YouTube version because the visuals are fantastic. Yep. He's in a van traveling to see these celebrities, and they literally walk in the van, sit down on a couch, pet his dog, and have a great conversation. Bill Burr's a great episode of that. Corey Feldman, I'm obsessed with that episode. Don't ask me why. I'm just obsessed with it.
It's a brilliant concept. It really is.
He does a good job on it. And so you can find that, the audio version, but you can also find that on the video version on YouTube. And yeah, that's what Steve-O's doing right now. I think he's going to go back on tour with this Bucket List. The Bucket List special is all the stunts that he could not perform on Jackass because the producers would not allow it.
So viewer beware.
Viewer beware. And since he's given me express permission to tell you what's in the video, there are stunts, guys, that I think Steve's going to die. Like, it's clear there is no... it's clear that things are going wrong, but somehow Steve pulls it off.
For sure.
It's on brand for sure. Bucket List. We watched the special. It's fantastic. So if you can get a hold of it, do. Let's take a short break, and then we'll get Steve-O in here. What do you think?
Can't wait.
Okay. We'll be right back with Steve-O. You know who he is. Even if you're under the age of 30, you clearly have heard of Steve-O.
You clearly have.
Clearly have heard of Steve-O. So we'll be right back with Steve-O.
Look, I know you guys are getting really sick of me, but that is too bad. It's my job. Now, go to tcbpodcast.com for all of our audio and video content, and get your little booty over to youtube.com/thecommercialbreak for fully edited video episodes. Want to chat? Leave us a voicemail at 626-ASK-TCB3. Too embarrassed for your voice to be on the show? We understand. Text us instead at 855-TCB-8383. Can't even do that? No worries. Just follow us on TikTok at TCB Podcast and on Instagram at The Commercial Break. And if you can't even be seen doing that, just listen to these sponsors and let's get back to the show.
Hey everybody, wanted to let you know that this episode is sponsored in part by Factor. Okay, do you want to know what the single biggest challenge for me as a single person was? Shopping for, prepping, and cooking nutritious meals. Do you want to know what the biggest challenge for me as a human with 25 to 60 family members living in my house? Shopping for, prepping, and cooking a nutritious meal. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, it's a big stress point around here. And since I don't really know how to cook, that stress often falls on other family members. But this holiday season, we're going to try something different. Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service, can help us fuel up fast for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with chef-prepared, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to our door. Because Factor's never-frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes, all you have to do is heat and enjoy. You can choose from over 35 weekly flavor-packed, fresh and never-frozen meals that support a healthy lifestyle and meet your meal preferences. And guess what? It's all delivered right to your front door. With Factor, we can be assured that we're making sustainable choices. They offset 100% of their delivery emissions and source 100% renewable electricity for their production sites and offices. Hey, look at that, a company who's trying to do some good. So head to factormeals.com/commercialbreak50 and use the code commercialbreak50 to get 50% off. That's code commercialbreak50 at factormeals.com/commercialbreak50 and get 50% off. We also want to thank Factor for being a sponsor of The Commercial Break. And we're here with Steve-O. Steve, what's going on, my friend?
I'm hanging tough. I've got my beautiful Wendy, good girl.
She's gorgeous. And I know she's on Wild Ride sometimes, too. I see that. I think that kind of disarms your guests a little bit. Like, they get to pet the dog and hang out there for a minute.
Yeah, you know, like, I disarm my guests a lot, I think. And that has to do with me bringing the studio to them.
Yeah.
With the van. I think people just come out of, like, their home, and then all of a sudden they're on camera, and they don't pretty awesome.
They kind of get, it's like interrupted from the normal flow of activity that they walk into some publicist's room with a camera and snapshots and all that. I think you give them kind of a homey feel. I was just sharing with Steve that I watched the Bill Burr episode of Wild Ride, which is fantastic. You have to check it out. His podcast and his vodcast. But I was watching the Bill Burr episode, and instantaneously, Bill's like, he's so relaxed. He's like, oh, let me pet your dog for a few minutes and we'll shoot the shit. I love it. Who told you you should go do a podcast and you decided to put it into a van and ride around?
Well, being that I tour and doing live comedy.
Yep.
It really is kind of an important piece of the puzzle to do a podcast. I recognized that, but I just hated the idea of asking that annoying question of my famous friends, like, will you be on my podcast? Like, I just, you know, like, it was so difficult for me to come around to that the only way I could is if I made it convenient by bringing the, you know, it's a lot easier to ask somebody to be on your podcast if you say, I'll bring the studio to you whenever and wherever.
Exactly.
Convenient.
You can roll up to their front door, basically. Let me ask you a question, because I've been dying to ask this since I heard you were coming on the show. You lived in Venezuela when you were a kid. Is that correct?
It is. I don't remember it. I moved there when I was 2 years old, I believe, and lived there, I think, for less than 2 years. I left when I was 4, I believe. So I don't remember any of it, but I did definitely speak fluent Spanish in nursery school in Caracas, Venezuela.
Have you kept that up? Have you kept the Spanish up?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
I lost Spanish and Portuguese. My first words were in Portuguese.
Here is why I ask that question and why it's so canny to me or uncanny to me. My wife is Venezuelan, like, you know, born in Venezuela. And then I chased her around the world and asked her to come to the United States with me. Now we have children. And so they're learning all about, you know, they're learning Spanish. It's a bilingual household. And I thought that was so fascinating. How did you end up in Venezuela? I'm assuming because your family, your dad took a job there. Wasn't he like an executive for PepsiCo or something?
He was. I was born in England. My dad was working for Procter & Gamble, and when I was 6 months old, the family moved to Brazil because dad became the president of Pepsi Cola Brazil.
Oh.
And I was raised by live-in maids. That's why I spoke my first words in Portuguese. Then dad got a promotion to like a larger territory of South and Central America. And that's why we moved to Venezuela.
It's such a beautiful country. I want to go visit, but, you know, there's some things to be considered now. I think it was a different country. You and I are around the same age. It was a different country back then than it is now. So it's not, you know, it's a little unsafe to travel to Venezuela as a gringo. But I can't wait to go because I've heard it's beautiful. I've seen so many pictures and the people there are lovely. So lovely. I married one, Steve. So and congratulations on your engagement, too. I know you got engaged about a year ago. Is that right?
It's been more than that. We've been on a real marathon engagement.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, which is good.
It's okay. Long engagements are okay. I think they're totally fine. Like, do it when you're ready.
Well, I mean, I'm happy to be so sure that I'm with the right woman for me. And the longer we spend engaged, the more sure I am.
So. Good man. Steve. Yeah. How did you get the name Steve-O? You have to tell this story about your brief but probably wonderful time at the University of Miami.
Yeah, there wasn't much to it. I was always drunk. My friends tended to be always drunk. Keg parties were events where I would make a point of acting out in some ridiculous way. And while I was acting out, that inspired my drunken friends to scream And it was just born of drunk people screaming, Steve-O! You know? And that was really as simple as it was, the origin of Steve-O. So I guess you say, what's the O stand for? And the genuine answer is nothing.
It doesn't stand for anything. It's people going, Steve, oh, shit, look at what that guy just did. Can I ask you, like, let me get inside your head a little bit. When do you start, like, just recognizing that you have this really strange ability to turn off fear and do things that other people clearly have no, and, you know, would not in the right mind do? Like, what prompts that kind of energy to come out? When do you start recognizing that this is something that people are paying attention to and I should kind of travel down this road?
Well, there's a kind of funny and kind of sad story from Venezuela.
No kidding.
When I was, I think it was my first day of nursery school. I'm actually reasonably sure that it was my very first day of nursery school. My mother was Canadian, and she went to pick me up from my first day of nursery school in Venezuela. And the women working at the nursery school, they said, you know, Esteban, you know, Steve is tremendo. Tremendo.
He's a great kid. And he's lovely.
No. That my mom thought that what they were saying, that I was tremendous.
Tremendous.
Great compliment. But as my mom related this to her Spanish-speaking friends, they said, oh, no. Tremendo doesn't mean tremendous or wonderful. Tremendo means like really terrible. That's the Spanish trend. Like,
that's right. Then,
you know, it was always kind of a funny anecdote in the family. But then years later, when I was watching the Blackfish documentary about the orcas at SeaWorld.
Yeah.
They had this lady, I believe, can you let her out? They had this lady who was describing having witnessed the mangled body of her son who had been torn apart by an orca. And she described the
sight. I remember this.
She said that seeing her son all torn apart by a killer whale was tremendo.
Not exactly something you want to be lined up with.
Right. Now, I don't know. I have no idea what the behavior was which inspired the label of tremendo when I was 2 years old. But there was something going on there. And,
You just kind of always felt it? Like, it was always a part of you? Like, hey, I just have this energy and I want to get it out in these ways.
Yeah, I would say so. There was just always something. I was 6 years old and jumped off of a like full-size refrigerator and landed on a nail. And
holy shit.
Yeah, like I was like somewhere in my leg. I feel like it was on my shin or something. And I had to get stitches. So there is like some stuntiness going on. Apparently, like the first
stuntiness.
Yeah, like apparently my first attempt at walking, like I somehow knocked out teeth. But you would imagine that you walk before you have teeth, but I don't know. Like,
That's not true. Children have teeth long before they walk, or at least in my experience, they do. So I think when you're walking, you do have front teeth at least.
Then that checks out.
Yeah, there you go.
I went a little overboard my first try at walking and knocked out my front teeth.
Do you have regular pain sensors? Do you have like a regular pain receptor? It just doesn't register, does it?
It's not that it doesn't register, because if I didn't register pain,
it wouldn't be as entertaining. You wouldn't have the fear. Yeah.
There wouldn't be the trepidation to build the suspense or the, you know, the reaction to pay off the bit. The simple fact with me is that my desire for attention outweighs my desire for comfort.
Do you attention? Once you start getting that attention, it's kind of addictive, right? It's like, what now that I have something that people are giving me attention for, and I find that I'm good at it, and I just go for it now. And does that like manifest itself through high school and college? And that's where people are like, Steve, oh shit.
You know, I wish that that was the case, but it wasn't really working for me when I was young.
Yeah.
You know, like I have a memory of third grade, like 8 years old. We were living in Miami, Florida, and I gathered the kids around in the cafeteria to watch me unscrew a salt shaker and just consume mass quantities of salt from it. Nobody thought. That everybody just thought it was kind of creepy and nobody really enjoyed that.
You became misunderstood because they were like, oh my God, what is that kid doing? And so maybe the attention at that age is a little bit different, obviously, than it is when you're starring in Jackass 4.
Yeah, I mean, it was not necessarily really good. I remember when I was 10 years old in fifth grade, one of, or perhaps even my last baby teeth was
loose.
But not really loose yet. I knew that if I ripped it out too soon, there would be a lot of blood.
Yeah.
And I went into class and told this girl I was sitting next to that I could leave whenever I wanted. I didn't have to be in class that day. She looked at me like I was a weird creep. And then when the class started, I ripped out the tooth super violently and there was all this blood. And I raised my hand to the teacher and the teacher said, go to the nurse. And I got up and said to the girl, like, see, I told you so. And like, so then that girl just thought I was a creep too.
We had this.
Everybody just thought I was a creep.
We had this guy on. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, David, like I handled that poorly right there. I was just going to say that there was a particularly it pierced my heart. And it's sad to say that that's the case. But I'm going to guess 2009, maybe 2010.
Okay.
I was setting about putting together my first book, which was a memoir called Steve-O, Professional Idiot. And my sister, being the family historian, pulled out all the files that she had compiled over the years for me to have kind of resources for my book. And in going through them, I found a report card from sixth grade, which was me when I was 12 years old. And there was a comment from my homeroom teacher, Mrs. Iaquessa, which read, Steve, so like some paraphrasing, but it said Steve's basically desperate for the approval and praise of his peers.
Oh.
You know, the affection, the approval, the praise. But everything that he does, seeking this approval and praise brings about the opposite results.
Mm.
You know, it was a story. And reading that, like, I mean, I was reading that as an adult in my 30s. And it was just like, oh.
I did it. Oh, God, yeah.
Feel the pain of that little kid, you know? Feel the pain of that little kid who wanted so desperately to be loved. And yes. Tried so hard to be loved, but the way that I tried so hard just made everybody feel like I was a creep.
That really resonates with me. I mean, and that worked out okay for you.
Yeah, I mean, that characterized my childhood. You know, I think there's I believe an element of alcoholism in that. Like the idea of just constantly feeling uncomfortable in my skin.
Yeah.
You know, like alcoholics very often, like, it's generally accepted as a trait of alcoholism, this feeling of always being irritable, restless, and discontent. Mm. And then people could sum it up by just saying uncomfortable in my own skin.
I agree with you.
Yeah, man. Like, yeah. I just wasn't comfortable, man. I had a very uncomfortable childhood.
I know you've been to many therapy sessions just like I have. And my therapist will often say, that's the little boy Brian talking, right? Crying out for attention, crying out for acceptance, crying out for something. And you know what? Every time she says it to me, it fucking rips my heart out. It really does, because I know she's speaking the truth. And so to connect with that, like, you know, many, many years later, you read this report card and you see, like, this was the little boy Steve looking for attention, and the teacher so aptly pointed out maybe he's not getting the kind of attention he so you know, so desperately wants. And but you know, that weird energy, right, that energy that you had turned into something that really has become who you are. It's the definition of Steve, at least to the outside world. It's the definition of Steve O. And you've become a great success. You are a fucking movie star. And quite frankly, you're a legend. Tina and I, who's sitting here with me, Tina and I, you know, we're in the age group that has squarely watched you grow up on TV. And you're just like, there's something about you, Steve, that is so real and authentic, even when you're doing things that are absolute insanity to the rest of us. We're all sitting there watching, cringing. There's something so authentic about Steve O and your journey, just as from, you know, watching you from the first season of Jackass to who you are today on Wild Ride. It's, we've like grown up with you. You've grown up, we've grown up, we've all become a little bit more mature. How, when you're doing Bucket List, which is your new special that's out there, and we'll show, tell people how to get there, and we'll put a link on the show notes. When you're doing Bucket List and you are taking it to the extreme, you clearly are scared of some of these things. Like the opening shot, I don't want to give it away because I want people to watch it, but the opening shot, Steve, it looks like you're going to lose your fucking legs. I mean, it's crazy. When you're doing that stunt, are you like, holy shit, Steve, what the fuck are you doing? Or are you just in some other zone? Like, you know, this is what I do. This is what I want to do.
Well, first off, there were a lot of kind words there. Thank you.
I mean it, by the way.
I'm profoundly grateful. Well, yeah, I appreciate it a lot, man. I really do. I'm also not particularly precious about saying what's in my bucket list special, because I think that you can tell people, you know, my vision was to be on a roof and have a big helicopter over me, drop a rope ladder, which I grab with my bare hands, and get flown off and crashed through electrical wires and stuff like that, and let go and land on the roof of a moving tour bus. Like, you can say that to people and not really ruin it. You know,
guys,
that was ambitious.
Guys, and, when you see this special, Steve is literally hanging off a fucking helicopter and he drops himself onto a moving RV where the landing is less than spectacular, but he pulls it off. I thought you were going to die, man. I was like, holy shit, there he goes. Steve's last stunt.
Yeah, like, it wasn't even planned when the bus hit me.
Yeah.
While I was on the ladder like that, it was very, very scary. And, I loved it, man. It was the most expensive stunt that I've ever put together. And it really worked.
It worked exactly well.
The way I wanted it to work. Actually, it even worked better. And my bucket list special is very much like that. You know, from start to finish, it's ambitious. There's the one where I get shot up with general anesthesia drugs while I'm riding a bicycle.
This is my next question. Tell this story. How do you convince a fucking doctor?
Yeah, go for it.
How do you convince a fucking doctor to put general anesthesia in you? How did you do that?
I didn't make this as clear in the special. But what we really did I said we spoke with a few anesthesiologists. I went on my Instagram story, and I put my story out on Instagram saying, "Hey, if you're a general anesthesia specialist, or maybe I said if you're just a
anesthesiologist,
please reach out to my guy Scott Randolph." And it's really remarkable how, like, 100% of the time that I've ever asked for some random help on social media, even if it's I need drugs to be stolen from a hospital and administered while I'm riding a bicycle through a field, you know, or I did. It wasn't on social media that the epidural stunt that took shape. But it's always worked, man. It's always worked.
You got to see the special. It's fucking fantastic. I want to move back one second, Steve. Do you have like the world's best health insurance, or are people just like, you know, you must see the doctor quite a bit, I would imagine, in your line of work. And tell me when's the last time. Go ahead.
I'm seeing the doctor more and more, and it's not even. I really don't think it's because of stunts. I think it's just the fact that, you know, I'm 49 years old.
Yeah.
Like I really like tomorrow. I'm going in. Tomorrow I'm having surgery on my knee to repair a torn meniscus, and it's not from a stunt. It's just wear and tear.
Yeah.
Like, if anything, I think it happened while I was riding a bicycle and not the general anesthesia bike ride.
Not the one where you went to sleep? Yeah.
Then again, it was from a stunt that I got the collarbone hardware put in, and it was from a stunt that I got the ankle hardware put in, and it was from a stunt that I got the skin grafts all over my body. Not all over my body, all over my arms and my back.
Yeah, I mean, you may not have had all the doctor's visits because of the stunts, but you've probably had quite a few. Is there, like, when you go to do a Jackass, there must be an incredible amount of attention paid to how we're going to insure the people that are on this movie and just getting clearances to do that, all those stunts.
You know, it wasn't until Jackass 3D in 2010 that I first asked, hey, what happens if somebody gets like really badly hurt or killed?
And the answer was?
They said, standard workman's comp laws apply.
Standard.
I'm sure there's insurance stuff too, but yeah, like when I broke my collarbone on the set of the fourth Jackass movie, and yeah, it was like a workman's comp claim.
That's insane. That's insane.
Yeah.
I would have imagined you guys would have been insuranced up in seven different ways to Sunday. But maybe
insurance too.
Yeah, of course.
Insurance too.
What is the craziest stunt that you have done a part of, you know, on your own bucket list, Jackass, any of the series, any of the television shows? What is the craziest stunt that you did that you just would never do again? I'm just done with it. I would never attempt that again.
There are plenty of things that I wouldn't do again. But I would probably say the one with the burns, the fire angels.
Yeah.
That was the big closing stunt. The grand finale of my second comedy special, which was called Gnarly. And that one lives just for free streaming, like at stevo.com if you want to watch that. It just starts playing right away.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, like, and you got badly hurt on that one. Burnt. Like,
yeah,
skin grafts.
That was the one, like, I mean, I laid down in a bed of rocket engine fuel and did snow angels while my buddies lit the fuel.
Who comes up with these ideas? You, specifically, or is it like you guys, you and your friends or the production team, y'all get together and you brainstorm ideas and then you see if they're even feasible? And then what's the process?
I mean, the ideas come in different ways, and the process certainly varies. But in that case, the idea was, you know, to just blow up my living room with me in it. It was actually inspired by my relationship with my girl. At the time, it was my girlfriend, who's now my fiance, and I just felt like I felt. Very strongly that this was a relationship that I was committed to. And to look at my house at the time, it was very much the house that I, you know, kind of decorated as a bachelor, and it was, you know, my bachelor pad. And I no longer wanted it to feel like my girl was, you know, in my house. I wanted it to feel like it was our house.
Our house. Yes, yeah. Totally.
So my way of making that, I said, I want to blow up the living room. I want to, like, really screw up all that's requiring us to paint over everything. And then I want my girl to lead the charge and decorating it to make it feel like our house.
Tina, this shows a level of maturity. This shows a level of maturity. Yes. It really does. Self-awareness and maturity. Because I know a lot of guys who refuse to change a damn thing. It's my place. It's my house. I'm keeping it the way that I want it. But I knew early on that if you wanted to invite a woman to live with you or your girlfriend or whatever it happens to be, if you want to do that, they have to feel like it's their place too. Not that just a couple dresses are hanging in extra space in your closet.
That is correct.
They have to feel like they're part of the game, right?
Yes.
Because I would want that too. So it's just like a bit of self-awareness. Look at you, Steve. You're all grown up, buddy.
Yeah, it was pretty rad. Like, I want to blow up the living room. Didn't really do a whole lot of damage to the living room.
You know? More damage to yourself.
We did, like, we made a little bit of a mess. But the damage was primarily to myself. It was just a crazy thing, man. It was, and whenever I've gotten hurt doing stunts, you know, thankfully I've recovered from everything for the most part. The more hurt I got, it's always just made the stunt more notable. It's been more of a notch in my belt. So there's nothing really to regret about any of that for me. And, like once something epic's happened, like it's happened, there's got to be a compelling reason to go and do something again.
Exactly. It's you adding to the art piece, right? I look at your career and you've just done so many things that are notable in my own head. And then, you know, talking to people that knew that you were coming on the show, you got to ask him about this stunt. You got to ask him about that stunt. And I think everybody feels the same way. It's like, holy shit, look at this guy's career. He's still alive. He's still walking and talking. And he has done all this stuff at his own expense for the enjoyment of the people on the other end. And probably you're getting something out of it too, obviously. But that relationship between the audience and you, all of it's on celluloid, which is the great thing too. What I see, like, on YouTube, and then I see somebody doing similar things for, like, you know, 10 views. Now, listen, this could be the beginning of the next Steve-O, or it could just be some kid, you know, breaking his arm for a couple of views. But you really have made a pretty storied career out of this. Can you walk into an airport or into a mall or, you know, Target, wherever you go shopping? Can you walk into one of those places and not be recognized? I'm sure during the pandemic it might have been easier because of the mask, but, like, if you don't have any mask on and you just walk in, do you get recognized enough that it becomes like, oh shit, I gotta go into Target?
The mask never helps.
Oh really?
Yeah, because as soon as I open my mouth,
it's,
I mean,
the voice,
like, I get recognized over the phone.
Oh yeah.
If I try to order a pizza. I mean, not all the time, but it's not infrequent.
Why do you talk this way? Is this like, is this just a gravelly voice? Or I think one of our intrepid researchers heard that you speak with your muscles and not with your vocal cords or something like that?
That's what I'm told.
Has it always been like that?
I don't know. I just suck at talking.
You graduated from Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Clown School, but you didn't actually go to work for the circus. Is that right?
I didn't work for the Ringling Circus. I worked for a circus called the Hannaford Family Circus.
Oh.
And I worked as a clown on Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines.
Oh my God, you're kidding me.
Nope.
So you're on these Royal Caribbean cruises. Are you testing some of these ideas that you have for doing crazy stunts? Or are you just taking it like, it's a job. I go out, I do my clown show, and then I call it a day.
I filmed crazy stunts on the cruise ships. And the line between what I did, you know, in my professional role on the cruise ships versus what I was doing as extracurricular for my aspirations and my video camera, that line got a little bit blurry. Certainly got blurry, but yeah.
When you were filming these, is this what eventually became like the tapes that you were trying to get into Big Brother was this pre or post or?
I was already in Big Brother.
Yeah.
When I got the cruise ship job, it was before going on to the cruise ship that the Big Brother boob video came out. So yeah, that was all happening, but there were like certain things like one of the clowns I worked with while we were in the office typing up our weekly report.
Clown report on Royal Caribbean.
The job that we had, it was called Interactive Performers. And the different things that we did, it was kind of an experimental thing. Like we were the first to have this job. So the company wanted a weekly report of what we did.
Okay, gotcha.
And we were typing up our report, and this clown that I worked with just grabbed the stapler off the desk and just whacked himself with it. And sure enough, he had a staple in his arm. And I thought, wow, that's like the coolest thing I've ever seen. And we got paid in cash on the cruise ship like every other week. Like every 2 weeks we got paid, and we made like $600 a week, so it was more than $1,000.
Wow.
That we got paid every 2 weeks in cash, and it was all $100 bills.
Holy shit.
The next time we got paid, I with my friend's blessing, I was like, man, do you mind if I take this staple thing? And I filmed a bit called the $1,000 Man, where I'd stapled 10 $100 bills across my arms and my chest. And I called myself the $1,000 Man.
Did you do this in front of people? Or how was it received on the Royal Caribbean? I'm trying to imagine Steve-O stapling hundreds to himself.
We did it. We did it in the same office.
Gotcha.
Where we typed up the
reports.
Yeah.
I've had friends who entertained on cruise ship. Like they were, you know, one guy did a piano and the other girl did a guitar or whatever. What was it like living on a cruise ship? How long did you do that job for?
I lasted for 6 months. I had a 6 month contract, and other clowns in my we were a troop of four clowns on this one ship. And all three of the other clowns went to the cruise ship brass and said, if Steve-O comes back for another contract, we all quit.
Probably some of the guests.
Yeah, it was a clown mutiny. They said, if Steve-O comes back, we all quit.
Holy shit.
So my boss clown, When I saw my boss clown, who wasn't part of my troupe, he was like, "Man, these fucking clowns went behind your back, and they made it so you're not coming back for another contract. They're like, it's not in the cards. You're not coming back, definitely not. And they don't have the balls to tell you that. And I don't want them to do you like that." He said, "I'm telling you, this job is going away. You do not have this job at the end of your contract. So I'm telling you to call up your skateboard buddies and try and drum up another gig." And he said, if I let it be known that he told me that he would lose his job. So I had to keep it a secret, and I had to work with these fucking clowns for another, it was another two months, and we were training for the launch, the maiden voyage of the world's largest cruise ship. Yeah. There were all these routines, these scripts and stuff that I had to learn with these other clowns, knowing that I would never perform them.
and that the other clowns had stabbed you in the back.
And they couldn't know that I knew.
Yeah, because it was all hush-hush.
Yeah, and I pulled it off. I pulled it off, and I reached out to Big Brother, and I was like, "Yo, I got this idea. Like, I'm gonna," because I'd been walking on stilts on the cruise ships, and always terrified.
That sounds terribly dangerous. It's like you fall off the edge.
Yeah, we're never like, it wasn't even about falling off the edge of the ship, but It was just falling in general.
Yeah, because the ship's moving. Yeah.
So because I was, I was kind of front of my mind, and I thought, man, I got to do it. So I'm gonna tip myself over on stilts, and I was like, but I got to make it big and rad. So I called up Jeff Tremaine. I was like, I'm gonna have a stilt costume, which will be lit on fire. while my stilt costume's on fire, I'm gonna have a unicyclist ride a unicycle through my stilts while a skateboarder jumps off the roof of a house over my head and through a fireball that I'm blowing out of my mouth. So the photo will be the skateboarder going through the fireball that I'm blowing out of my mouth while the unicyclist rides through the stilts, and I'm on fire. And then when those two guys ride away, then I'm going to crack open a beer and pound it while I tip myself over. And then when I hit the ground, I need to be extinguished. And I wanted that to be the cover of Big Brother magazine.
Wow.
Tremaine liked the idea, and I walked off the cruise ship with like $9,000 in cash, which was not clever of me to have been stashing all that cash in my cabin on the cruise ship.
Especially not with those fucking backstabby clowns.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe I put some of it in the bank. I don't know. But there was a bunch of cash that I had. And, I flew myself back and forth to California to do, to do big stunts to try to get noticed. And when I got out to California with the fire stunt, that's when I met Knoxville. Tremaine waited until I was out there, and he was like, "Hey, dude, like, now that you're out here, I can tell you, this isn't just for the magazine. We're doing this for a pilot."
Jeez.
And I did that fire stunt for the pilot. It didn't make the cover, but the photo was the table of contents, the whole page.
Yeah.
So it was pretty rad. We got a cool photo out of that. Kind of the rest is history. It had those clowns. And you know what? Like, I do owe it to those clowns. For me to, I can't provide history.
Yeah, fair enough.
The reality is, the truth is, I gave those clowns every reason to, I was very disrespectful of those clowns. I did not think they were fucking rad. I didn't think they had any like skills that I admired. I didn't think that their stupid shit that they were trying to come up with was funny or rad. I just didn't think anything that they did was awesome at all. And as such, I had no respect for them, and I behaved very much with
disdain.
I mean, not disdain as much. I just didn't have time for them. I was like, whatever you guys want to do. And I would just have my headphones on, practicing my juggling, and just I ignored them, and I was disrespectful. And so, they had every reason to do what they did. And thank God they did what they did, because if I kept that job for another contract,
you wouldn't have been Jackass.
Yeah, there goes the Jackass pilot. There goes the whole thing. So,
Steve, name one of those clowns who made $1 billion at the box office.
That's right.
I think everything turned out okay.
I don't think Jackass made any $1 billion.
No, I'm talking about all of it together. You guys. Do you think you've made $1 billion on all four movies?
No.
So, well, that's a damn shame. You should have made $1 billion.
I think we probably cracked $500 million. But all four movies put together, definitely not $1 billion.
Honestly, anything over $10,000 sounds rich to me.
That's right.
Good. You have to, if you can, please touch on one thing. True or not true, you did blow with Mike Tyson.
Oh, yeah. A bunch of it for hours.
Were you not at all intimidated? Do you know him? You guys had like a previous relationship and then you hung out one night and somebody had some blow? Or...
I'm pretty sure it was the first time we ever met, and I had a bunch of cocaine, and we locked ourselves in a bathroom for probably 3 hours until we had consumed it all.
Wow. And what is the conversation like with Mike Tyson when everyone's high? Are you guys like really, listen, I've done quite a bit of blow myself and I know what those conversations can be like, you know, hours long, yeah. Meandering. We're talking about saving the world. And then you wake up in the morning and all you want is a beer and to go back to bed. But what do you guys talk about? Do you remember any of it? I mean, you don't have to share anything super personal, but.
For sure. I think the final thought, Mike's parting comment was that everybody's got Steve-O wrong, that Steve-O's actually very intelligent.
Wow.
Yeah. Who? He said, everybody's got you wrong. You're a smart guy.
Wow. Really? To have Mike Tyson say that to you? I'd just be a little nervous. I mean, listen, I don't know Mike Tyson, and he seems like a perfectly lovely guy. You know, he also has matured, and you listen to him sometimes, and you're like, wow, Mike Tyson really got his shit together. Like, he knows what he's talking about. He's almost like a philosopher in some ways, right? And but I don't know, just me personally being stuck in a bathroom with Mike Tyson doing blow, I'd be like, oh, I hope this doesn't go the wrong way. I hope he also thinks I'm intelligent, so I don't get hit. Steve.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, and I know I shared a little bit earlier on in the conversation, but I see Arla, and Tina's been a friend of mine for 30 plus years, and we've been big fans since you guys came on air. And I have to say that I feel like our life path have gone similar directions, and it's just such a pleasure to talk to you and know that the authenticity that we kind of felt through the screen is really there. You're a really cool guy, and I'm so grateful that you came on the show.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it. For you to know about the stilt stunt for Big Brother, that's going deep, man. That was a long time ago, and it's pretty rad, dude.
If I'm gonna have Steve-O on, I'm gonna ask questions that I sincerely want answers to, not ones that I already have answers to. So, and you know, we do our homework. We don't want to sound like total idiots once we get on air.
I love it, man. I love it. I appreciate it. And man, sounds like you checked out my bucket list special too.
We did, and we're gonna encourage our listeners to do so. Also, Steve-O, podcaster, stunt maker, philosopher. Engaged for a long time guy, and doesn't matter because he'll do it when he's ready. And I'd like to consider you a friend of the commercial break now too. Will you come back on sometime, Steve?
Sure, man. I love it. Where does this live?
It's in Atlanta. Oh, it lives on YouTube, but it really, where the audience is on the podcast, on the audio version. So of course, we'll send you a link. We'll get in touch with you and send all the information and come back on sometime. We love you. Best to you. Thanks, Steve.
Hey, man. Thank you. Appreciate you guys.
No problem. Glad to have you. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, dude.
Let's cut to the chase. We love you, and we want to hear your sweet, angelic voices asking us for advice. So give us a call and leave us a voicemail at 626-ASK-TCB3. If you're not ready for that kind of commitment, which I understand, send us a text instead at 855-TCB-8383. And as always, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at The Commercial Break and on TikTok at TCB Podcast. And this wouldn't be a TCB promo if I didn't tell you to go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, to watch all of our amazing video edits. You can also go to tcbpodcast.com to find everything we have ever put on the website. Let's listen to some sponsors, and then we are back on track, baby. Love you. Bye.
Oh my gosh, what a fun time with Steve. He couldn't have been more gracious.
Absolutely fantastic.
I am still tripping over that story about Mike Tyson and doing blow for 5 hours with Mike Tyson.
I can't believe he said locked in the bathroom.
Locked in the bathroom with Mike Tyson. And listen, I've seen, I'll reiterate this, I've seen lots of recent video. We've all seen Mike Tyson since his heyday as a crazy and crazy talented boxer. He would destroy human beings and everybody was afraid of him. But he seems like he's gotten some self-awareness and some perspective on life. He's almost like a philosopher now.
Super chill.
A philosopher with a really weird voice, but a philosopher nonetheless. Yes. Doesn't he raise pigeons? I think he does. I think he's a pigeon raiser.
Wouldn't surprise me.
It doesn't surprise me either. It's like the biggest example of brute force in our lifetime, Mike Tyson.
Absolutely.
Is like petting pigeons. He did this whole documentary about petting pigeons or something. It was really fascinating. But then when Steve says, the clowns voted me off the island, like the clowns stabbed me in the back, I just
too
lost
much.
My shit.
And then he said the boss clown.
Oh yeah, the boss clown.
I'm just imagining thugs, you know, like,
yeah. And how do you not get hired on the circus that paid you to train
outrageous.
In the circus? It's
only,
outrageous.
Only Steve.
But here's what I like about Steve, and I'm trying to convey the message. I hope I did appropriately. Steve also has some perspective now in his later life. I think now that he's sobered up and he's probably been to more therapy meetings than we'll ever go to in our entire life. He's just got some self-awareness and there's not an air of anything about him. He came on.
Super authentic. So genuine. Yeah. Very humble.
Yeah. I liked it a lot. I'm really grateful that Steve decided to come on.
I hope we get him back one day.
We will get him back.
Yeah.
I have a feeling he'll come back. And Chrissy's not here. But if you had told Chrissy and I at the beginning of this crazy adventure, or even a month ago, that Steve-O would agree to come on the commercial break, we probably would have laughed you out of the room.
Yes.
Because this is the most mediocre comedy podcast available. I have a feeling none of Steve's people listened to the show before they agreed to come on. But we're so grateful that he did decide to come on. So all the pertinent details are available inside of the show notes. Let me remind you. Go check out his special bucket
hilarious.
List. Pay a
go
few
watch
bucks.
It. Yeah.
Go watch it. It's not money wasted. If you're a fan of anything Jackass or Steve-O, you're going to love this. Also, check out his podcast, Wild Ride. It's good. And he's got some real big-time celebrities that walk in the door. I was watching the Johnny Knoxville one. Can I hear you? No? Why can't I hear you? What happened to you? I don't know. All right, Tina went away. But there you are. I don't know what happened there. But let me give you the pertinent details for this show. TCBpodcast.com, as Christina says, go there for everything that we've ever put on the website. You can also dial us up at 1-626-ASK-TCB, the number 3. That's 626-ASK-TCB, the number 3. You can leave us a voicemail or text us. Comments, questions, concerns, content ideas. Ask Brian's mom. Ask TCB. You need advice. We're here not to give it. It's going to be fantastic. You're going to love it. You want your piggy fronting sticker? Let me move backwards a little bit. You want your piggy fronting sticker? They are available. You can go to the website, hit the contact us button. The drop-down menu says, I want my free sticker. Give us your address, and then 7 to 10 days later, we'll send it off in the mail. It takes about 2 weeks to get to you. So leave Astrid alone!
Poor Astrid.
Poor Astrid. Also, at the commercial break on Instagram for clips of the show. We'll put some clips of Steve-O up there, of course. TCB Podcast on TikTok. And then, youtube.com/thecommercialbreak. Here's what we're doing. We're putting out clips of the regular episodes, and then we're editing and putting out the full episodes for the interview, so you guys have a chance to see and hear your favorite celebrities here on the commercial. See and hear your favorite celebrities.
Oh yeah, Steve-O's got to be one of my favorite celebrities. Oh my God. Incredible.
But he is now, that's for sure. In all of my celebrity interactions, I will tell you that I've had two in the last 3 weeks. Heather McMahon, and Steve-O.
Fantastic.
They're just like fast friends. And we'll probably never talk to him again. But hey, at least we got one opportunity to do it. So go to the youtube.com/thecommercialbreak. Subscribe, like on your favorite video, comment, all that good stuff. You know how to do it. We want to thank you for being the best listeners in the podcast universe. Keep those reviews and comments coming. We just love them. Oh, and Chrissy will be back for season number 5. I talked to her just a couple days ago. Guys, send all your thoughts and prayers, guys. Thoughts and prayers. Right. All right, that's all I can do for today. But I'll tell you that I love you.
I love you.
Best to you, Tina.
Best to you, Brian.
And best to you out there in the podcast universe. Until next time, Tina and I always say, we do say, and we must say, goodbye.